Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, okay, this is the 999th show. So tomorrow we will hit our 1,000th show, and we're not going to go back and look back or take a historic look. What we need to do is we need to keep going forward, because all of this content is absolutely relevant in this coming election. All of this content is that we've been covering for probably a couple of weeks now, if not three, is all of the explanations of what the problems are regarding the Constitution, how far out we are outside the alignment or the box, the framework of the Constitution. So I can't emphasize enough just how important this content is. And once we get through this, then we're going to get back to the basics so that everybody's, so you can come back and listen to these, all of these episodes of these issues. You can go back and listen to the, you know, creating constitutional counties. But what you need to understand is precisely how the framers defined the Constitution, legally defined it. So let me just kind of move forward real quick and basically let you know that we're very close. We're going to have the Biden petition posted tomorrow. So hopefully before close of business, hopefully even before the show, but we will have that petition up and posted tomorrow. We also want to let you know that this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and this is the only show that goes through the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. If you've got, and if you haven't done so yet, and you've got some time, and you got $30, go get yourself a subscription to the Wyoming Constitutional Chronicle. This is how you'll be able to kind of look at, you know, the inside view of Wyoming politics and some of the issues that need to be brought forward, but more importantly, what journalism needs to start looking like. Now, we also want to emphasize that if you are going through organizing your constitutional unorganized militia and or having an organizational meetings, you go to the Republican Central Committee meetings, whatever it is you're doing, you need to bring up to whoever is in charge, your chair or whoever, that why don't we start providing some education on the Constitution, and actually go to Constitution Education US and provide some ideas and or suggestions as to what your organization could use. In addition to that, we'd also like to emphasize that if you need some type of covering and protection for your expensive equipment, go to RadioDeskCovers.com. And if you need something custom, just send an email off to Stan Kluett, and he will help you. And I'm, again, struggling with a frog in my throat, so forgive me. Sometimes, you know, I have to say this, because a lot of times I try to ponder on what can I do to make this message just more easier for people to, you know, to come to and sit and listen. And, you know, you often wonder, well, is it me? You know, why is this not going out further and further? Why do we have this slow migration of people and this growth of listening? Obviously, I must bear some burden. I know that the people just love to have entertainment. They love, you know, snazzy, you know, sound bites. They love, you know, beautiful people. They like the video era, radio, and just listening to somebody is just, it's just not the same. I know that there's probably lots of barriers in getting messaging out today. I understand this. And so I hope it's not me. I can take some criticism. If there's something we can do, something I can do that would help, if you believe, wow, if you were only doing this, you know, like if I was singing the information, now I'd be happy to take your suggestions. Because I believe this message is there's no more important message going over the airwaves today. in helping you understand precisely what the problems are, looking upstream and identifying the sources of these problems, and actually drilling into what do we have to do to fix it. The problems all have one thing in common. The government is not in compliance, but we, the people, have to understand exactly how all of these things are non-compliant. Regarding our property rights, I mean, we've completely lost scope and lost vision of what our property really is. So I don't want to delay too much in going into this plea or what have you, but you know, I want you to understand, I actually do have inflection. I do look at myself and go, you know, am I the weak link here? I don't know if I am, and I don't think I am. I believe that there are maybe some things that can help, but I believe that I'm struggling, and we're all struggling in a world that is completely divided by just incredible abysses of differentiations, or actually separations between generations. If you look at, you know, the greatest generation, what we call, you know, those World War II, Depression, those people that lived through that, from the baby boomers, you know, all the way up to the latest, from the millennials and into the betas. And I guess the betas is the current generation coming out today. When we look at the vast differences of how we receive information, process it, and so forth, it's not the same. Getting kids today, or getting younger people, millennials, X generation, Y, all of these different generations are all caught up in their own world and how they see things and how they interface. So it's, I understand it's not easy. But what is it that we can do? Give us a call, 425-270-5416. All suggestions welcome. Anyway, let me move forward, because when we left off, we were covering identity. Actually, we weren't covering, was it identity and of persons? Yeah, it was. So we went through the Fourth Amendment, and we kind of identified all of these different problems and so forth, which when I think of identity and that type of stuff, it just makes me think I need to get back in touch with Mark Lerner. We need to have a follow-on conversation, because it's been a while since we've been there and talked about that. But bottom line, you know, I left off with, keep in mind, the only laws the federal government has the authority to enforce and punish are treason, counterfeiting, crimes committed on the high sea, crimes committed against the laws of nations, and that's it. Nothing else. All other crimes and criminal laws are state and state jurisdiction only. So keep in mind, when we start looking at how they've been, you know, passing and enabling themselves to be able to start tracking us and creating this Big Brother state in moving, you know, everybody says, hey, Big Brother, this is bad. We can't be doing this. But how is it that we're continually gravitating, like being pulled into the sun with no restraint whatsoever? We're not in orbit. We're in a straight decline in by either some gravitational force in pulling us in. What is happening, and what we've been, our society has been manipulated with the concepts of the, when I say crime kind of just is an umbrella or a blanket covering. Because bottom line, when we look at crime, we look at loss. We look at loss of life, you know, harm, you know, beatings, the theft of things. So when we look at crime, we actually look at a form of defiling, being defiled. And so when we look at how they project, you know, crime is rising, that means that the chances of you being defiled. Have you ever had your car stolen? Have you ever had something significantly happen to you via a crime? I'm not going to marginalize, you know, all of the different significant types of crimes. I myself have had my car stolen, and how defiling that was. And that was just that one little thing. I couldn't imagine, you know, having, and we've had other crimes, personal crimes convicted where, you know, harm and so forth has been done. My friends, I understand when they start talking about crimes, you know, it's just a word, right? but it instills this fear. And you have to understand that crime and fear and these types of manipulative speech are tools used by demagogues to seize liberty. So we have to look upstream at the source of why and how these things are happening, because we're in this perpetual downward spiral. Crime is always increasing because we're not really addressing the societal problem that, you know, is creating the crime. If we backward spiraled up, it would all go back to education, morality, prayer in schools, all of these types of things that they started using to debase society. When we grew up as baby boomers, you know, we didn't have to lock our front doors. We could go out and play, and we played until dark. I mean, some people have seen these memes that say, you know, today's generation will never know how good we had it. Well, it doesn't have to be that way. All we have to do is go back and implement the things that actually made those things possible. So here's the key, that we have to start being willing to understand that we can't let government rule us into saying, you can't do these things, and oh, by the way, everybody has a right to do these other things. We can't allow government to be the culprit in debasing our society and basically promoting debauchery. We're going to go into a break. And so what we want to do is we want to get into how we can eradicate this, and then we'll get into petitions.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
So let me give you two other, I'll say, tools. Yeah, well, actually, they're not tools. These are two traits within society that helped propel this progressive debauchery debasement. And those two, and they actually start with T's, and those two traits are tolerance and trust. So as we move forward, society had within it, because society was good, we had this level of tolerance and trust because people weren't really that bad. People really weren't trying to do harm. People really weren't trying to, obtain evil outcomes and so forth. I mean, when we look at Alexander Hamilton, and I look at what he was doing and how devious he was he really as evil? He probably, as a matter of fact, I look at what a lot of these guys did, and as they probably see the world today and see how their work basically put this world into this position, I myself would be probably rolling in my grave. I would probably be, you know, retching my hands and just going, oh, I can't believe I had a hand in this, because it wasn't their intent. As Washington says, it's by noble intent that we do, you know, we allow, we tolerate, and we trust noble things to be done. But we must hold to the principles and the process within the Constitution to preserve our liberties. Because he basically says, when we allow government to usurp powers, this is Washington in his farewell warning, that when we allow government to usurp powers for whatever the intent is, this is the customary tool used to destroy nations and societies. So as philosophical as, Washington may not have really been, at least some of his messages were very poignant and very direct. And I think some of these words, because I've talked about this before, his original draft of his farewell address to America when he was going to step down after his first term was written by James Madison. Now, the biographers of Alexander Hamilton claimed that it was Alexander Hamilton that wrote that farewell address that we know today. When I look at this, that line right there, that we do not allow changes and usurpations, that we must follow the mode in the Constitution, that the states must amend the Constitution to delegate those powers. That right there was James Madison. Alexander Hamilton was a huge proponent of usurping and assuming and basically creating this concept of implied powers. So I'm here to tell you that when you look at historians and how they say, oh, well, it was under Alexander's, you know, umbrella and his influence and so forth that he used that, there's no doubt in my mind that when Washington really looked and reflected, and as a matter of fact, Washington was one of those men that if you crossed him, and what I mean by crossed him is if he felt like, you know, you were a problem or hurting him in some way of what, you know, his image or what have you, he was kind of a man that had really a high level of, I'll just use the word pride. He had a hard time, you know, reconciling and overcoming those things. And as a matter of fact, Hamilton was, he was a very astute man. And if you look at how Hamilton was underneath Washington, Washington really wanted and actually needed Hamilton to be his aide. And that's why Hamilton was his aide for so long. And then Hamilton had to finally push back and say, look, you know, I've spent this whole war as your aide. I think I deserve more as a commander. So Hamilton got to a point where he actually could go poke Washington in the eye and basically say, you know, you need to trust me more. You need to give me these powers. And Washington had to admit that, you know, he deserved a chance. He deserved these opportunities. And in so doing, Hamilton basically found a way to manipulate Washington. Sorry for diving into the history, but I just want you to understand, you know, what and how and why we got from this awesome republic that had, you know, such a great America, where America was good. We were a moral, good society. And these things that were used on the evil side, as well as those things baked within the society, such as tolerance and trust, all of these things made this perfect, I'll just say this perfect stew for, you know, everybody to basically become drunk or what have you on, you know, well, we don't have to worry. We can just sit here and ride the laurels. This is such a great nation, because it was. So what we have to do to take measures into eradicating crime is by education and actually starting getting people to be empowered, because we can't eradicate crime unless people actually stand up and defend themselves, put in measures to make it so that, you know, if a criminal is going to take the risk of trying to confront you with a, you know, a person-to-person type of crime, and we absolutely have to start restoring true punishment. True punishment. I mean, you know, these Club Med prisons that we've got do not punish the people. They get better medical and they get better care under the roof of the penal system than they do, you know, on their 9-to-5 job. So going out and getting money and stuffing it away so that they can retire later, come back into prison, live the life of O'Reilly, and then, you know, get back out, add a little bit more to their nest egg, you know, that's the perfect criminal path. Because when they're finally retired and they walk out of jail, they've got this big nest egg of, you know, cash that they can just live the last of their days on. At least that would you. That's what, you know, that's my vision of these criminals and their career path, you know, to retirement. How do they get to retirement? Anyway, I've gone too far into this. Let's get into some petitions. And these are basically petitions 36, 37, and 38. All state and federal databases and collecting of personal data from cell phones, emails, as well as purchase history, internet usage, and all of these datas must be expunged. There is no reason why we're allowing these companies to basically continually collect our data, because these companies have direct ties to government and this information becomes accessible to government. So we have to basically make it so that companies are not allowed to store personal data. Now, we already have this, or we have laws like HIPAA laws that are HIPAA laws that actually keep HEPAs, I guess, for air filtration. Somebody like me would know that. But anyway, we have laws like HIPAA laws that do not allow anybody to have access to that information of your personal medical history and so forth. We need to treat all of our personal history as equally vile, or not vile, as equally vital to our person in existence. And we need to maintain these, excuse me, we need to maintain this concept of holding that so that it is not accessible to anybody else without our permission. So we need to actually have these databases expunged, and we need to have anybody and everybody doing these collections to actually have, you know, this opting out. You collect this data, you have our, you know, my image, your my bio information, what have you. It doesn't matter. You have to expunge it, and you have to actually make sure that you expunge that, or at least you give me the chance to tell you, you must expunge that. I do not want you maintaining my data. You know, it's kind of like you go to these websites and you want to come to our website, you have to allow these cookies, or you have to be a subscription. We're getting to a point where companies are becoming, and I think it's important, we start recognizing what companies are on the internet that, you know, want to pry into your everyday life and want to add and actually contribute to maintaining a digital fingerprint on you and what you do, then we have to stay clear of these things. And as a matter of fact, what we need is we need states to basically say, hey, if you're going to, you know, have, you know, cookies, and you want people to, you know, allow these cookies and allow this information, you also have to allow them to opt out of you being able to use that information in sharing or what have you. Because bottom line, you know, a company may want to have this, you know, this information of service that they claim that they need, but they can't use that or share that or sell that. And that's what many of these companies are doing. And so, in other words, they're making money off of you coming to their website and selling that data. And that's absolutely wrong. We are not for sale. America, we have to put our foot down and say we're not for sale anymore. Now, when it comes to government on all of these things, no government can obtain, store, or maintain, or use biometrics for monitoring of people, for public monitoring. We gotta make clear that we do not want the state or any city or municipality, county, any form of sub-element of government at the state level or local level to be able to utilize this type of biometric, facial recognition, this type of stuff as monitoring in Big Brother. We'll be right back after this.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
If you haven't really noticed, we're really focused on a lot of technology and understanding how technology has really started melting the lines and actually blurring, you know, the morality of being able to collect your data. I mean, it's all, as they justify this, this is how they sell, this is how they make money, this is the entrepreneurial capitalistic type of thing. Actually, no, it's not, because that's the facade that they use. But I believe the real design is basically being able to gather and collect all data and utilize artificial intelligence to be able to start predicting and, you know, going down not just beyond this Big Brother path, but this social credit type of path, because that's exactly what artificial intelligence is doing in China. And so once we're all done with just this biometric and this what we call the identity and personal information, we're going to dive into now, because we're now understanding all of this, we're going to get into software, operating systems, firmware, and those types of things, because these are the culprits that are doing this. So anyway, the development of databases for any purpose other than crimes at the government level cannot be permitted. And a two-person, I'm going to give you a intelligence term, two-person integrity. a two-person integrity or more. In other words, requiring three separate people to always be able to engage. So when we have crypto, when we have certain types of data or information, classified information, that, you know, had to be safeguarded, that one person could not have unattested access, that what you had to do was you had to create a two-party sign-in, that the only way you could access that safe, that information, or to obtain the material required for loading your crypto was two persons. In other words, one person had access to that combination, and another person had access to a separate combination. And usually what they did was they had safes with literally two combinations on it. So if you've ever seen some of those things, go, what the heck? Double security? Absolutely. Triple security. Quadruple security. We need to have measures to where we keep other people, because, again, Snowden and the crap that Snowden did wouldn't have happened if the access to that information always required some level of additional integrity and checks and oversights. You know, people don't start doing bad things if they know they're being watched. But if they know they're being trusted and they know they have unattested access, the next thing you know, they'll steal you blind. And that's what Snowden did. So using this concept of two-person integrity measures needs to start to be implemented. So when we actually create these criminal databases, access into these databases and so forth can't be just trusted to a single person. And especially when it comes to moving that data or making it available for, you know, somebody else or something else, that it all has to be accounted for and accurately accounted for, because we don't want people in the background to do what, you know, what they think is good, or what, you know, what Google or the progressives and globalists want done. We have to maintain, and this goes back to my paradigm, an old paradigm I have, that you can't ideologically take somebody, put an ideologue, because almost everybody has their ideologies. They're either pro-communism or pro-liberty. We've become that divided. So you can't hire people into public positions and not acknowledge that we're that divided. And so it's not about black and white, it's about ideologies. And so we need to make sure that if for every person that we hire for the DMV, you know, you have an equal representation of both ideologies there. Why? Because it creates a two-person integrity ideologically to ensure that people aren't, you know, just handing out voter registration and those types of things to people that should not be getting it. You know, these states claim that, oh, well, we're not giving voter ID and registering illegal aliens, these invaders, into the voting system, but they are. Because the way they've created these measures, you know, it's all up to that one clerk at the DMV. And so when we have these people that are working there, you know, most all of them are huge, because I believe they're either union or what have you. I don't understand why everybody that's working in the government system are huge communists. But that's where they've done. They've all migrated to that. Maybe that's just because of, well, I don't want to speak ill, because I know that there's got to be at least a few. There's got to be good people out there that are, you know, involved in working in the public sector, right? Right? Got to be. Anyway, so we have to use this two-person integrity types of measures. And these things need to be implemented, such as firewalls. As a matter of fact, in some cases, you have to isolate all of this data. And there are protection layers. If you understand what protection layers are, there's PL1 to PL5. That's a way that they isolate and move data from one position to another. So creating these criminal databases need to be within a PL5 protection layer so that you can't move the data out, easily, that it requires a lot of hoops and it requires a lot of monitoring and logging so that we know where that data goes. So it's one thing for your state to have a criminal database where, you know, we have the DNA and those types of things. Here's the problem. If you get suspected for a crime and they collect your DNA, they collect your fingerprints and everything else, and that crime is solved and somebody else, you know, goes down that path and you know, this is the person that got convicted, all of your data needs to be expunged. It is not acceptable that they just maintain that and maintain that and maintain that. To be able to, you know, make, it's one thing to make, you know, criminal prosecution easier, but it's another thing for them to start actually creating other connections and, you know, having your DNA and having this type of information can become absolutely tyrannical because they can start understanding other things about you. They can understand, you know, when family members come in, oh, this person's related to they don't need to know all of that. You know, having pure intelligence at the level of government, I'm okay with it when Christ comes. But our government today, made of men, we know these men are not angels. We know that these men are very susceptible to corruption. As, you know, the old Lord Acton, right? Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So we have to always keep these things in mind to ensure that they can't obtain absolute power. Okay, so we have to have all of these firewalls in check and these two-person integrities and protection layers when it comes to all of this personal information that government is collecting. So this way we maintain this constraint to ensure, because the whole point of all of this personal identity is to stop and make it impossible for us to get to an artificial intelligence state of Big Brother monitoring us and allowing computers to actually take over or gain such a layer of control where the globalists basically have implemented a path that they have locked us down to basically oppress and suppress us for the remaining days of our lives. Now, we know that these things won't end up happening, but we have to be cognizant of what they're doing and how we can stop and thwart this, especially here in America. So let's dive into software operating systems and so forth. And I'm not here to, you know, teach you all the tech stuff because many of these things I've even forgotten. But I do know this, that when it comes down to software, firmware, and operating systems, you know, we have to understand what this stuff is, because this actually lends to patent laws as well, because you have to understand this so that we can understand what software really is, what operating systems and firmware, because really there's not much difference other than the level of complexity. Firmware is basically, you know, just code. It's software that has very set levels of instructions that does certain things. And there is some interesting firmware out there that can actually do some good collection. I mean, if you look at how China uses spying hardware and firmware in, you know, like if you buy a Lenovo laptop, if you buy anything that is Lenovo or a Chinese product, they have hardware that has firmware in it on the motherboard that will deliberately take everything you do and send it back to China. It's designed to do that because they want to know what everybody's doing, and it all feeds into their artificial intelligence and process. And I'm telling you, the tech companies of America that are helping them do all of this, this is not something they did on their own. This is not something that they transitioned from, from working on dirt floors in the early 90s with Clinton becoming, when Clinton became president, he gave them so access to so much technology and actually gave them access to advisors. We went in there and taught them everything. We gave them everything that made them this monster that they are. So when I say that America has been subsidizing and underwriting and basically guaranteeing the growth of communism in the world, I really mean America has been doing this with your tax dollars, my friends. We will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so what we're going to cover here is actually going to cover some information regarding spying, regarding, you know, patent laws and so forth, because technology has really started bending, you know, the what is reality, what is true, and, you know, how we need to actually start treating this and looking at this. And so, you know, the question is, you know, how many operating systems are there? Well, there's not very many. And as a matter of fact, are operating systems something that actually, you know, is something that we're, are we benefiting from a free market and a capitalistic system of operating systems? Let's think about infrastructure, and let's look at this in a, you know, in a basic sense, because software, firmware, operating systems, and software applications and those types of things, the apps on your phone. Basically, what these things are is a set of code that actually works and or interprets this code, interprets functions for your kernel or your operating system and tells it what to do and how to do things. So when you run an application, that, you know, it'll basically tell, you know, how to launch the window, all the instructions it needs to give you the interface that you need to provide you data, get your input, what have you. So bottom line, this is just literally a set of instructions. It's somebody that sits down and writes in a language. So languages have changed. They've got COBOL. They've got, at the OS level, is MS-DOS. And MS-DOS is the foundation of the Windows or OS. There is Unix. There's a lot of different variations to Unix. There's Linux. And actually, if you didn't know, Linux is a free OS. The question is, are we benefiting from the, you know, all of these different varieties, or have we finally reached the point where we understand the superior OS and the best way of basically computing would be Linux? Because Linux is being proven. I mean, it is the It's the foundation for cloud computing. It's the foundation for these motherships and even artificial intelligence and how it operates in this virtual cloud, in this virtual world. We've migrated away from proprietary. So the question is, when we start, because this invokes a question of what's better for us moving forward. Should we allow companies to do this? Or should we, you know, look at this more of an infrastructure? You know, you just buy your hardware. And because if we all use the same OS, then we would all understand, we would all interoperate. I mean, things would be a lot better, wouldn't it? It's like if we all had our own highway of how we connected and everything else. And we still really, when we look at computing in the world today, it is a wild, wild west scenario. Now, I'm not saying that we need to do this. You know, we need to create a single OS and that maybe, you know, maybe the state should do that. I'm not saying that. But I honestly believe that really smart people and, you know, people that understand liberty and the people that understand, you know, these fundamental principles, a lot of these people need to get together in a room and start having a conversation. What is the path forward? Because I tell you what, allowing corporations, you know, to run amok, that has been our problem. And reeling them back in and keeping things under a level of control so that they don't basically, you know, herd us into kennels and control us, because we are being controlled and manipulated. I mean, look what Facebook, look what all these tech companies have been doing, folks. Should they ever be able to do these things? Should we not actually start creating constraints to say, you can't do these things? This is criminal. What they've been getting away with is criminal. So anyway, this language is not unique, and many functions, features, and capabilities within all of these different OSs, softwares, and so forth, you know, are actually shared. And what that means is that there is no such thing as an OS that was a 100% unique. And there's nothing that actually creates any, you know, uniqueness about any application or anything else, because most all of these things share commonalities and they steal from each other. They use, hey, well, they were able to do this. Either they backwards engineer it or they outright steal it. And so the reason I'm sharing all of this is because when we look at patent laws, you know, how do we apply patent laws from all of this theft and sharing and commonality? Really? Operating systems are kind of unique in a way that they have this level of complexity, and I don't want to, you know, oversell this, but an operating system is, you know, is basically that interface. It's your kernel. It's the one thing that interfaces your hardware to the applications that you may want to run, but it also provides you applications and services. As we saw with Windows, they created Internet Explorer, a browser that was baked into the OS. And there were a lot of companies that said, hey, that's not fair, and or that's actually, you know, manipulative. And there were lots of insinuendos that went back and forth, as you know, it came down to maybe OSs shouldn't be provided. But go look at Windows 11. Go look at Windows 10. You know, as these operating systems come out, they want to offer you more. It's the same thing with Apple. You know, it's baked, you know, all of these little functions, applications are baked into the OS. But technically, if you have a raw OS like Linux, they do have utilities and applications in a lot of these different Linux. But if you just go get off the shelf BSD or a basic Linux, then it doesn't come with any applications and it doesn't have all the drivers. You'll have to download and or build drivers for a lot of your hardware, like your video card and so forth. And I don't mean to get all techie, because I know there's lots of people that, you know, don't care to learn this stuff. But it is important to understand how this stuff functions at a high level. So that's all I really want to go through here. For anyone really looking for, you know, a superior OS, I will tell you to go to Linux. And as more and more people flock to this, because they are making Linux far more user-friendly, as more people flock to this, then it will start drying up, you know, the ability of Apple and the ability of Microsoft and these other companies of making so much money off of you that they can control you. Anyway, when we start really taking this concept of software, applications, and so forth, now what we want to do is we want to lay this layer or this understanding of the Fourth Amendment. And that Fourth Amendment we already read, that the right of the persons to be secure in their persons, or the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And no warrants. In other words, you have these rights, and government can't violate these rights. We actually have to apply these towards corporations. So we need actually, we may need an amendment, if not laws by the states. And I think the laws by the states is where we start. States need to start creating laws that basically draw this line, that any application, any tech out there that is taking your data, then they have to let you know. So this goes down to how software actually starts functioning and starts sharing. Because anybody that has a phone, if you didn't know, at the Android level or at the Apple level, all of these applications provide data, and they share data to basically the mothership, which is Google or Apple. And so you got to trust the devil that you want to trust. Both of these companies are deeply rooted in the Chinese communist progressive movement in, you know, taking tech to the new level. So none of these companies, as far as I'm concerned, deserve any of that level of trust. So if you have a phone, if you have a smartphone, and you have applications on it, every single one of those applications that you've installed, I'm almost 100% true on this. So this is 100% reliable, that every single one of those is spying on you. They're collecting information and data, and they're sharing it at the OS level with, you know, Google or Apple, and they're cross, you know, communicating all of this, because people go, well, how is it that I'm talking? I'm not even doing anything with my app, and I'm talking to somebody with my phone that's, you know, kind of there listening to me. It's on, but I'm not on the phone talking to anybody on the phone. I'm just in the room, and next thing I know, I go to my, you know, social media, or I go in my browser, and I start seeing these ads for things that I was just talking about. They are spying on you, and they cross-pollinate, and they share the data. We have to get states to draw the line and say, you cannot do this. You cannot collaborate and share data. Hey, he's just talking about this. The ability that the fact is that your phone and that operating system has the ability to understand, translate, and take intelligible information and share it with other applications for what they want to claim marketing, don't believe it. It is not just marketing. If you haven't heard, Echo Dot and some of these other little smart things that they put with artificial intelligence into your home actually feeds, and they've actually had people get, you know, drug busts or what have you. And in some cases, some of these calls to law enforcement actually were flops. In other words, they were huge fails. In other words, there was I think it was in Kansas or maybe Missouri, where they busted in on people and there was no crime, and it was a huge embarrassment. I think it was for Echo. Anyway, my friends, we've got to get a control on this. We'll be back and close this all out. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process.
This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.